This is a Pinball News production.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Hello. My name is Brian Madden, and I'm going to be the host of the next hour long discussion we have, which is called Making Pinball, Making Friends. And I'm proud. The way we're going to do this session is there's four small conversations that will be about 10 minutes long. And rather than having a big panel where you're only watching one person talk at a time and you're watching everyone else just kind of sit there awkwardly trying not to pick their nose, we'll just bring the people up on stage for each separate conversation. And so the first conversation we're going to have is with Aaron Davis and Dave Beecher with Fast Pinball. And all of these conversations today, again, the title is Making Pinball, Making Friends. And so everyone here on the stage is involved with creating and building their own pinball machine. And this is in the context of not working for a big company and doing it, but as hobbyists. The fact that anyone out there who's interested in either building a custom homebrew pinball machine from scratch or taking an existing machine and re-theming it to something else that you like better or updating the rules, that's now possible to do. And so everyone here in the conversation today has been involved in that, and that's what we're going to talk about. So first, Aaron and Dave from Fast Pinball. Hello, and welcome to Making Pinball, Making Friends. I want to start with you, Aaron. You came up with a title for this session.
Right.
What were you thinking?
Something lighthearted, something that kind of reflects what we do every day, like chatting all day long and creating pinball. I mean, this whole process for a lot of us has been about like learning new things, trying new things, like new challenges and stuff. And you know, when you get to be our age, it gets a little bit harder to just find and make new friends and stuff. But when you're crowded around a cool project, everybody chipping in like their own ideas and their own, you know, own perspective and stuff, and conversations start, you start, you know, getting to know each other better, and pretty soon you get to work with a lot of really cool, really smart people. So there you go.
There we go. And talk a little bit about Fast Pinball. This is your third or fourth expo as Fast Pinball. Maybe just for people who aren't familiar with what Fast Pinball is.
Well, so Dave and I started Fast Pinball together as a way to kind of, I don't know, like pull some fun things that we like to do in other places and under jobs in other places into something that's more fun, like pinball. And, you know, I've run like a real estate technology company for like 17 years, and it's great to pay the bills, but not like feeding the mind the way that learning new things about pinball, electronics, engineering, manufacturing, all that kind of stuff, that's really been satisfying, you know, and it's something that I needed, you know. And I think that working together with Dave, a new friend through the Fast Pinball stuff, it's been really cool to learn from him and all the experience that he has and, like, you know, share a lot of that stuff back and forth.
So talk Fast Pinball is a company. What do you guys do?
So we make pinball electronics and control systems and things to make new games. So you can take our controllers, come up with a great idea, cobble it together in a way that like lets you, I mean, we got a bunch of the hardware in the back here, but it basically it's the control systems that are designed to like control all the mechanical parts, read the switches, control the lights and stuff like that, and basically bring pinball to life.
And so these control systems for pinball, you talk to me like I'm five.
Sure.
We're talking about... You know, hey, anyone can make a pinball machine, and you take your favorite theme, you can make it in your basement, it's really fun, and we jump right to, oh, it's control systems for pinball. I'm like, what in the world are you talking about?
So, it's, dude, this is like on the spot now. I mean, basically, the input and output, I feel like I might be too high level on that.
You make circuit boards.
There you go, right there.
The go inside pinball machines.
Yes.
That people can use to make their own pinball machines.
Correct. Control light, you know, all the RGB LED lighting and stuff that you want to make. You could read all the switch inputs. You can control the devices and things like that. It's basically what makes the pinball machine alive. You know, there's a lot of different ways to program the games and stuff. But whatever software you write eventually has to get down to the point to where it's physically controlling devices and interfacing with physical things in the game. So the Fast Pinball hardware is really designed to do that. Take your ideas and your software and bring what's on the play field to life.
I like it. The thing is, though, you know, it's sort of overwhelming. I mean, the concept, you know, if you open up a pinball machine and look inside, there's a lot of boards, a lot of wires. And so the fact that these things exist, that people can just go buy this hardware to build their own pinball machine is great. But what are you doing to actually help people sort of get started? You know, I've got the idea in my head of a pinball machine I want to have. I know you exist as a company. Yeah. bridge that gap for me.
So, like, one of the things we're trying to do is kind of fast track that process of like getting to the fun part that drew you into wanting to make a game. So, I mean, some of the stuff that you see behind us here, like, you know, the white wood play fields and stuff like that laid out, we're trying to even get down to the point to where, you know, we can have kits and things that make it easier to say, like, you know, if you follow these instructions and you go through these steps, you can get to where you actually have a game that flips. And I think that, you know, what we're realizing right now is the experience that we have with all of us here learning all this stuff together is not sustainable and repeatable forever. You know, we can't have this exploring experience every single time a new customer comes along and buys a set of hardware. So what we'd like to be able to do is, like, with the kits example, is say, you know, if you had the base requirements of, like, you know, the power supplies, the control system, a white wood play field to play with, and a bunch of mechanical parts, that set we can turn into some instructions that you can actually follow through. So for just tonight, we're going to set up power supplies, wire it all up as you see here, get your meter out and test these points and make sure that it's actually set up correctly, and you're done for tonight. The next step, be able to hook up your control systems, get your meter out and test to make sure all the voltages are right on the boards, get a terminal prompt up and make sure that you can actually get the inputs and outputs from the switch devices and stuff. Okay, you're done for tonight. You know, these are the things that if we can take you through those stages, then if you think you have an issue or something like that, or an issue or something later, we can actually go back through and we know that you can troubleshoot these steps and stuff. So that way, when you reach out to us and you say, I've got this awesome idea, I want to make this really cool thing that does whatever that is, we're not worried about whether you hooked up the power right or if your system's set up right. We can say, if you've gone through those steps and we're going to step onto something cooler, that's the part we want to be able to help with. So I think that's one of the things we've been showing over at the booth and stuff. It's like some examples of these kits that are designed to make that jumpstart process a lot faster.
And Dave, a question for you. You know, pinball has been electronic for 40 years, and there's a lot of sort of trends in the electronic guts that go inside pinball machines in terms of making things, you know, more flexible and safer and easier to set up and, you know, troubleshoot and that kind of thing. And I know you've done a lot of work in this control system to make it professional and flexible while also being easy to use. And I wonder if you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, where to start when starting to build pinball hardware. I've been, I think this is elementary school, actually. There was a pinball machine in my house, Sea Hunt. Thanks, Dad. That probably started this whole chaos here. But it's interesting because anytime you start on a project, it's so important to learn about what was done in the past. Because, you know, if you just start today, it's like, and don't understand everything that was learned, like, you know, what happens when a coil, you know, when the energy gets released from a coil, the electromagnetic, you know, pulses that come back, destroying parts and all that. All this has already been discovered. There's schematics out there. There's all kinds of information. There's all kinds of logs about, you know, or blogs at what happens when parts fail. So, I mean, that's where I started when looking at all this. I went through all the old schematics and actually got to talk to some of the designers and had these questions like why certain things were done. So, anytime I start on a project, that's the thing I do, is I try to learn as much about the past as possible. And then try to look at, like, modern-day electronics, like, what are some things that we can do to improve upon those things? So when you really look at what's been done, especially, like, in the power sections and some of that, this has, like, been done over and over and over again. But the whole introduction of service mount parts, you know, all of this, like, trying to make it, you know, lower cost, smaller, so it can fit underneath the play field, all that. This is where kind of the challenges are all were and, you know, things I enjoy doing. So
I think a key point is that, you know, your new company that's you know, been around for, well, 3-ish years, something like that. You've got hardware that is shipping. You have customers. This is stuff people can buy and order and put into their own pinball machines. But it's based on, you know, looking back in the history of what's been done in the pinball universe in terms of how electronics should work in pinball machines.
Yes, correct. And then, you know, looking from a software standpoint, too, it's like I always got frustrated when trying to write higher-level software. In fact, I still don't do much of it. I appreciate Mission for doing what they do. But, you know, I always, when you're making hardware, if it works like itself, for instance, timers, everything in pinball machines, you know, you hit a switch, there's some timer that goes off, run a coil for X amount of time. There's so much polling that has to go on in your software to make all of these things happen. So what I try to do in the hardware levels is try to remove all that abstraction. So the hardware itself, when it sees a switch, it just automatically fires a coil. And that whole choreograph of events, main coil kicking in, then switching to pulse width modulation to kind of reduce the amount of power going to the coil, all that's handled in the hardware. So I just kind of set out to try to make it so it just very simply does what it's supposed to do. And the software is kind of reduced, you know, to waiting for switches and doing all the events that need to happen, you know, update the score, do the next light show, play that sound. But anyway, that's what I strive to do in the hardware levels.
And all the hardware that you have is in the Fast Pinball booth here at the Expo. So you brought your sort of demo board back there. There's a color LED display. There's a different control hardware and I.O. boards and some big monstrous looking things back there. That's all in the booth that you can show and explain to people how it works, and we can actually touch it and play with it and see it in action.
Yeah, absolutely. Come see me. I'll give you a good demo.
Aaron, I want to wrap up with a question for you. So what do you see as the next steps for people, or the first step? So someone has this idea, like, it would be cool, again, whether it's you're making your own pinball machine from scratch, or whether it's just taking an existing machine and, you know, retheming it to Little Mermaid, my idea, or just updating the rules. What's the first step with this?
I think the first step is like to come up with some motivator to do it. You know, whether it's like a design challenge that you have or a theme that you want to bring to life, but there's got to be something that's going to carry you through the challenges. You know, you've got something that if you're doing a retheme, the advantage of doing a retheme with an existing playfield that's already there, maybe you strip the art down and do your own art. The geometry's been solved. You're not having to make sure that, like, do these angles actually work? Can I do this shot? You're focused on delivering the story of the theme that you're trying to deliver. So for a lot of the people that are trying this for the first time, I suggest, you know, if you're not just going to sit there with a blank whitewood and start from scratch, taking something and salvaging a game and kind of giving it a second life and a new theme is a decent way to start, because you're not having to solve, like I said, all the other geometries. You can get all the existing mechanisms that are in there, wire them up with new hardware, make sure all that stuff works, and then again, like, that theme and that existing geometry taking place lets you, you know, carry on your adventure of, like, learning all it takes to control a game. You know, you eventually you need to get the point to you're writing code and everything else. And if you're not, like, you don't need to be, like, extremely well versed in every aspect of it. You know, usually, like, it breaks down to maybe like five or so different disciplines it takes to get through a game. And maybe two of them you're pretty good at, one you're curious about, and maybe there's two more that you just shouldn't touch. You probably got some friends or family or something like that are good at those points. So having people to collaborate with is a really great way to kind of take on a project like this. Because, you know, if you want to sit down and solve the entire thing, you know, from cabinets all the way down to game code, that's a lot to do. So finding some ways to kind of dial down that effort into something more manageable is, like, I'd say that's probably the suggestion I'd make.
And that's a conversation we can continue this weekend. Yep. In the Fast Pinball booth.
Doing it all weekend.
It's a giant booth with lots of friends in there. As we said, it's making pinball, making friends. And as you know, pinball machines, it stretches all aspects of your mind and your creative skills when you want to build a pinball machine. Because it's woodworking, it's electronics, it's audio design, graphic design, animation, light shows, electronics, you know, software, all of these different things. Storytelling. And in the booth, you've probably got 15 different people who are building and retheming different machines at different phases. And we're all going to... We've been working all day yesterday and today. We came out here for an hour to talk, and we're going to go right back there and continue working tomorrow and Sunday. So Aaron Davis, Dave Beecher from Fast Pinball, thank you so much.
Thanks.
So joining us for our next 10-minute segment, we have Jan Kantert, who's on the left, and Quinn Capen. I don't even know. Is it Capen? Capen.
Yes.
Quinn Capen, sort of representing Mission Pinball Framework. It's interesting because in the whole making pinball, making friends theme, I've been working with these two guys for over a year online, and Quinn I never met in person before.
Yeah.
So it's pretty great to be able to do that. So there's this thing called the Mission Pinball Framework, which is computer software to power pinball machines. There's four people primarily working on it. One is Gabe Knuth, who's down there with the Indians hat on, Go Tribe, and Quinn, Jan, and me. And so we have this thing called the Mission Pinball Framework, and I wanted to talk about that for the next 10 minutes or so. And of course, the way to sort of kick that off is, what is the Mission Pinball Framework? So I don't know which one of you wants to explain. You know, if I walked up to an elevator and said, what's this Mission Pinball Framework you're doing? What is this?
Okay, so consider you want to build a pinball machine right now. So what do you need? So what do you think?
I mean, the first thing, you know, if you're going to build a pinball machine, I think you need an idea. You need a theme for what you want to make your pinball machine about.
Yeah, right. So we start with this. And then you need the hardware probably. We talked about that before. So
I have an idea first. I have some hardware. Either it's something I'm going to retheme, or it's going to, you know, something new I'm going to start with.
Yeah, then you have to build your play field, actually. Then you have to wire it up.
And we have back here, this is from the past presentation, but, you know, this is something that Aaron from Fast Pinball brought, but it's sort of a blank pinball play field. And it has just the holes for the flippers and the slingshots and the trough, and that's it. So if you're building a new pinball machine, brand new, you know, blank canvas from scratch, pretty much every pinball machine is going to have flippers and the slingshots and the trough, and then from, you know, well, I'm holding this upside down right now, but everything beyond there is different. So I need a play field. So I get a play field. And so, now what?
So yeah, now you wire it up, and it will do exactly nothing, because it doesn't know what it should do. And that's where the Mission Pinball framework comes in. Actually, you tell it, I got those switches, for example, the flipper switches. And I got certain coils, for example, the flipper coils. Then you tell the framework, now this coil and this switch, those are the flippers. And you turn it on, and you're flipping.
And this is, I guess, you know, when you focus, you don't think so often about the software that goes into pinball machines. I think that has become more prevalent in the conversation recently as we talk about code updates from the big manufacturers and things like that. But it is. So I start with a play field. I plug in my flippers, my slingshots, my coils, and I want to say, hey, when I push this button, I want it to flip.
Yeah, right. And that's the simplest rule. So pulse on flipper hit, basically. And we abstract that away for you. So we can also do more complex things. For example, you want a multi-ball. So say, hit the switch, and it kicks off a multi-ball. And internally, it says, well, get me a ball from the trough, launch the ball, count it to the playfield until there are three on the playfield. Then, if one goes down, shoot again, for example, and so on.
And that's, you know, there's a lot of stuff in pinball that, if you really think about it, is kind of complex. You know, like the multi-ball example. So if a ball goes into a lock, I want to lock it and launch another ball. But if the ball already has the second ball in there, you release it from the lock. But if it doesn't, you release it from the trough. But what if it fell back in the trough? Now I have to try and pulse it again, but I can't pulse full power because it'll knock out two balls. And so this is all the kind of stuff that, you know, even though that exists in every pinball machine, the basic idea is, hey, I want to shoot a lock and start multi-ball. And that's some of the complexity you're talking about, the Mission Pinball Framework. It does all that under the hood, so that if you're just someone who wants to make your Little Mermaid game, then you don't have to worry about all those details.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the prime goals of Mission Pinball Framework is to make the software to run pinball machines accessible to beginners. And I think maybe you don't have much software development experience. And so one of the things about MPF, Mission Pinball Framework, is we try to make it accessible even if you're not familiar with software engineering type of things. And so you can learn a little bit about the language of the sort of units that make up the various devices and things in your machine, and then you can configure some simple files to basically go through all the devices and give them a name, and then you can, with these nice little files that you can edit, start controlling your behavior that you want in your software without really even writing any additional code. Now, that said, too, this system is very flexible and extendable, and so if you are an experienced software developer, there's a whole wealth of built-in functions basically for you, but you can certainly customize it to your heart's content with as much code as you would like to put in. But when you're starting, you really don't have to be very experienced at all with software to actually get a pinball machine flipping and working.
And one of the things we'll add is the Mission Pinball Framework, there's a step-by-step tutorial. And it sort of makes the assumption that you've never done any programming or any kind of coding before. And it literally start one, step one. And here's how you, it's like imagine like in a file menu new. And what do you do first? What do you do second? Here's how you define a switch. Here's how you define a coil. Here's how you define a flipper. Now let's define a light. Let's turn it on. Let's make it when the shot is hit, it gives you some points. Let's make it so you can add a second player. And it walks you through everything. And when you're done with that tutorial, you have a fully, it's a functioning game. And then from that point, it's just up to you to add all the additional things to it. You know, like you say, the multi-balls and locks and modes and achievements and all these things.
Yeah, so the basic idea is that we provide you with building blocks with reasonable defaults. So, I mean, usually you got a multi-ball, it has a ball save. That's not every multi-ball has a ball save. You can turn it off. You can even do, I don't know, have three locks and feed them a multi-ball. But that would be not a standard building block. So at that point, you would have to start writing a little bit of code. And you can do that. But if you have a simple lock and a simple multi-ball, then it would just work. That's basically our goal.
And a lot of stuff that just works is, you know, multiple modes and mode stacking and what starts and stops modes and, you know, tracking achievements, you know, and you go through all the modes and complete this one, try this one again, now complete it, now you've got wizard mode. That's all sort of built in to be able to track that, as well as doing, you know, like just different light shows and patterns of lights and things.
Yeah, speaking of light shows, so basically, no, you got your rules, you're flipping, but there are no lights. So next step is you can add light shows and we can trigger then on certain events. For example, you shoot a ball to a target or into a scoop, then we can trigger light shows or even slideshows. And then on we got professional audio things, which Quinn built, so probably I'll let
actually,
him
speak. Yeah, Quinn should talk about that because, you know, one of the audio things, so what something you don't, again, there's so much stuff you don't think about. And you can imagine if you break down the audio of a pinball machine, there's multiple tracks that are happening at the same time. Usually there's a music track that's playing in the background. Usually you've got sound effects if it hits slingshots and flippers and pop bumpers and stuff. You might have voices talking, just telling you, you know, shoot this, shoot that. But there's different things you want to behave differently. Like sound effects, you can have those play as many times as you want. If it's multi-ball and pop bumpers, they can all play a sound effect. But for someone talking, a voice call out, you don't want those to play at the same time because it sounds confusing if two people are talking at the same time. And that's something that from the Mission Pinball Framework standpoint, Quinn specifically, who's written the audio system for that, you've put a lot of time and effort to make that as easy as possible for people making their machines.
Yeah, certainly. We try to provide all of these great building blocks, and maybe you're not familiar with all the kinds of concepts that you might want to think about when designing sound. And so, by default, we try to help you through this through, there's a tutorial just for about most of the things that you could think about you want to add to your machine. So in the getting started in your sound, we set up the various kinds of tracks and explain what kinds of sounds you might want to use on each and why. And there's it's very deep too, so there's a lot of additional features. There's something called ducking, for instance. Well, what's ducking? Well, if you have a whole lot of sounds going on at once, there are some you might want to definitely make sure that your player can hear. And so one of the little things that you can do is basically when you had a call out, you've gained an extra ball, so you have an extra ball call out of some kind. You want to pull down the volume of everything else that's going on just for a moment so that you can really prominently hear that call out. And so that's called ducking, and it's one of the features that we have built in so that when this sound plays, it automatically pulls everything else that's going on down subtly, and the end result is a much more professional sounding pinball machine. And so we've tried to give you all of the building blocks for a professional result.
And you're, you know, the examples you gave are about sound, but there's similar type examples for working with DMDs and color DMDs and, you know, multiple displays. And we talked about, you know, ball saves and ball timers and modes and player tracking and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, one simple example, which we just recently just figured out, is if you have a lot of lights flashing, you want to flash them all at the same time. Because it's totally confusing if the arrows flash at different times.
Like all over the place,
so it's a simple feature, but it just makes it look professionally. And we try to provide reasonable defaults for most of the things, so that you can change them if you think you know better than we. And there are certain points where you certainly do. But if you just start up, it's probably good for you, at least what we hope.
The Mission Pinball Framework, so this is software. You download it. The cost?
Oh, you can get a free license here today.
And what other days is the license free?
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday.
So Mission Pinball Framework, it's completely free software. It's an open source project, which means that lots of people around the world all collaborate to make it better. And you can download it and use it if you want. If you're a programmer and you want to make some changes to it, you can send them back to us, and then we add them into the product, and it gets better and better. That's why it's missionpinball.org is the website. There's sort of four core developers and probably another 10 people who've contributed here and there. Even if you can't write software code, you can read the tutorial. And if you find a typo in the tutorial, you can send us a correction, and then you are in the credit for helping making it better. So that's the Mission Pinball Framework. Quinn Capon, Jan Kantert, thank you for your time today. And we've got it running on a bunch of machines in the Fast Pinball booth, so certainly stop by and check that out if you want later on. So thank you. So next up is Mark in City. And hello, Mark.
Hello.
You are pinball internet famous.
Okay.
Sure. for this machine, this in progress.
Right.
So you are like just some dude who's building your own pinball machine. I don't know if anyone can guess the theme. No idea.
It's the Nightmare Before Christmas.
This machine, you brought it with you. It's over in the Fast Pinball booth.
It's over there. It's playable.
Can you hold this a little closer?
Maybe I don't want to.
Oh, the tubes want to see you. Yeah.
Okay. It's out there in the Fast booth. This is the second year in a row that I brought it. It's a work in progress. It's fully playable.
I took some pictures. I took these photos. I don't even know if you know I took them. I took these just a couple minutes ago before we were here of it. And certainly it's a fun game to play. But I want to talk about, so let's back up. You work in a library or something, right? I mean, you're not a pinball designer as a job, right?
No, I'm a software programmer. I work at university in London, Ontario. That's my day job, but my night job is pinball designer or whatever, or builder. So, I've been doing that for the past couple of years.
And so how did you make the transition from you have an idea you want to build your own pinball machine to starting the process of actually building your pinball machine?
Right. So this started off, I had an idea for the theme. I love the movie, so I had a few ideas of how to turn this into a pinball machine, had a few ideas for modes and stuff. So I created a virtual version of this that's playable in future pinball. So then I decided it's like it would be nice to translate that into a real machine. So I did a little research on the hardware that was available and stuff, and then I just kind of went at it and printed off a blueprint of my virtual system, and then just started drilling holes and attaching pieces.
Like, it's literally, you get a piece of plywood and just start drilling holes in it and screwing a flipper here and a flipper there. And
right, yeah. Like, you can print off the blueprint to scale. You glue that onto your piece of plywood. You start drilling the holes where all the screws are supposed to go, where all the mechs are supposed to attach and stuff, and then just go from there, yeah.
And this machine you built from scratch, so it's not an existing cabinet or existing machine that you rethemed. It's a brand new from scratch.
Right, it's not a retheme. It's all completely blank, yeah.
And is this, I mean, in terms of commitment, is this a couple hours a day? Is it a couple hours a week? Is it like 24/7?
It's thousands of hours, I guess. I'd never used a router before, so I learned how to use a router. Just various things like that. It's all from scratch, so a lot of the time was the learning process as well. So.
And for people thinking of this, do you think, should they?
I think anyone can do it. Go ahead, try it. I don't want to dissuade anyone from doing it. It's a big time commitment, but you can go at your own pace. There's nobody setting your schedule. It's not like a business or anything like that. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of learning, picking up different tools and figuring out what they do and stuff. And it's amazing once you make your first connections and you have your flippers flipping and some lights come on and stuff. It's a really satisfying.
And is there anything that you in terms of, you know, doing, you're doing a little bit, kind of bit by bit. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, pinball machines are expensive, but if you have to do the work, you know, you don't have to buy everything all at once because it's going to take you 10 years to put it together anyway. So you might as well buy one flipper and make then buy the next one and just kind of
exactly.
bit by bit.
Yeah, like for the first year, it wasn't inside a cabinet. So you can just start with this a blank play field. You know, you invest in getting some flippers, some slingshots, a couple pop bumpers or something. You know, and you just keep adding pieces as you go. And you can go through different iterations and stuff too. I mean, a piece of plywood's not that expensive. So if you don't put your lights on it, then, you know, it's a lot less work. So you put pieces on it, like the flippers and stuff, and then you get your ideas for where you want your shots to go. And I don't know if you noticed, my ramps are made of paper. Paper's pretty cheap. And duct tape, it works pretty well. It's held up for the past year. So for prototyping, it's just wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, you can see that. Like, the actual ramp, it is literally just a cardboard ramp. So you just kind of cut, tape, glue, hack it together, and
yeah.
The balls really roll on the cardboard and everything, and that's fine.
Exactly. You just draw it out on your bristle board or whatever. I used, like, a mat board. Just cut that out with scissors, and then you cut strips for the side pieces. You duct tape those on, and it works. It's great for trying out different ideas.
And then I assume as you play it, you get more ideas, too, about what you might have in your mind, what works and what doesn't work, and then you can make adjustments.
Exactly. So if you're going from a virtual game into a real game, you might lay it all out. And then, like, what I went through, like, this is my second iteration. The first one, I didn't bother with lights or anything. I was just testing out the geometry and stuff. And then you realize that in the virtual systems, flippers don't, the strength of the flippers is a little different. So you can actually make any kind of angle shot. But then when you get it onto a real thing, you find out that there's an actual sweet spot for the flippers. So then you can readjust where your ramps are, your orbits and stuff, depending on what you've discovered in the real system.
And if you can see on that, the image on the right is a little bit more zoomed out, where it says The Nightmare Before Christmas, that's a full-size LCD. So in addition to doing pinball-type things like making ramps and drilling holes for lights, I mean, you're making animations right. and pictures and sounds?
Exactly. It's very multidisciplinary. I mean, I learned how to do the woodworking. I learned how to solder everything together, a little bit of metal work, bending the guide rails and the different hoops and things. And then you move on to the software. But using the Mission framework, it's pretty simple right now. But, well, I do programming for a living, so it's not that bad, but yeah, and it's just building blocks. A lot of small little pieces. You just keep adding to it, and it's not that bad.
And I should have probably opened with this, but can you give us a little tour of the game? Because like Nightmare Before Christmas is awesome. I mean, even if and like this is it's over in the Fast Pinball booth, so we can all go play it later. But
it's playable.
Like, what's the game about?
Well, it's based on the movie, and in the movie, Jack is the leader of Halloween Town. And he gets a little bored, and one day he discovers Christmas Town, and so he decides to take this over for a year. So that's the main theme of it. So it's what I've done is I've incorporated all the different holidays into it. So I have like three different mode stacks that you can start. So one is the holidays. There's seven different holidays. You can start a mode there, and then I've represented all the different characters from the movie as well. So those are modes as well, so you qualify those and start their modes. And then the main villain from the movie was Oogie Boogie, and so he's going to be a figurine in the middle, animated with some servos, so there's a few battle modes against him as well.
And you've got the mayor in there with the little head that turns around?
Right. So I decided to incorporate some servos, which is really simple on in the Fast system. There's just a nice little daughter board that you plug into your driver board, and then you can control a few servos. And you basically just tell it's like, I want this angle or this other angle. So I have a little Mary figurine that his head just turns 180 degrees whenever I command it to. So that was pretty easy.
There's magnets in there that actually throw the ball around?
Yeah, I basically borrowed something from all my favorite games. There's a magnet, there's the target bank, there's all sorts of different orbits.
A lot of work with orbits and diverters. You've got diverters hooked in where you make quick shots and it moves the ball around.
Exactly, yeah. I really like J- different orbits and different loops, so I tried to incorporate as many as I could. So I have a nice diverter right in the middle that allows me to do clockwise or counterclockwise orbits and stuff.
There's the bathtub, which is a prominent, you know, thing that sort of kidnaps the kids. So the bathtub ball lock where the balls stack up, and then the drain in the bathtub opens and the balls come down.
Right. So I wanted to incorporate things directly from the movie. So that's one of the key scenes where Jack hires these three little guys to go and kidnap Santa Claus, and they actually travel in a bathtub. So I have a lock shot for that. You lock three balls into the bathtub, and then it starts a multi-ball.
So these pictures are from, you know, an hour ago. And there's beautiful light shows running on it, and you've got the slideshows and the sounds, and it's all very playable. But what's next? You know, it's I guess at some point.
Yeah, it's obviously missing the artwork on the playfield. We have a lot of ideas for that, so we're going to be doing that next. And the ramps are going to be turned into plastic at some point, and then a lot of. Design ideas for the cabinet as well. There's going to be some fancy metal scroll work and sort of like a gate idea up at the top as a topper.
And then the most important, since you are the creator of this pinball machine, you get to pick the acronym that's used, right? Because everyone talks about, you know, AFM and that kind of stuff. So Nightmare Before Christmas?
So it's NBX.
NBX.
If anyone is looking for it.
Awesome. Well, Mark and City, thank you so much for taking the time.
Okay. There's a thread on if anybody goes to Pinside, I have a thread there, so I'll be posting updates as I progress over the next probably couple years to completion.
And I think there's over 1,000 posts in that thread. It's a busy one. So, yeah, we'll check it out online at Pinside on that thread. Check it out in the Expo Hall over there in Fast Pinball's booth.
Thank you.
Mark and City, thank you so much. So our final guest today is Gabe Knuth, and this may be one of the weirdest presentations or conversations you've ever heard about here, because Gabe is here to talk about the Brooks and Dunn pinball machine.
We made a game about a band we hate. No, it's not hate, but it wasn't my thing, right?
So tell the story. So first, let me back up. If you go to the Fast Pinball booth right now, there is a machine called Brooks and Dunn with that playfield in it that appears to be a complete machine. If you think back to, I don't recall Brooks and Dunn, you are correct. If you look at Brooks and Dunn on IPDB, you find a story about it was a production game that may have had some prototypes made, may have not really known, nothing much is known about it. There's a picture of a blank playfield, didn't exist. Walk us back from the reality of it exists right out there to what we previously knew or did not know about Brooks and Dunn.
All right, I'm going to start at Pinball Expo last year. We've been coming here for 3 or 4 years now, and we've walked past the Mike Pasak wall down by the entrance there, and we always walk past these kind of carcass machines that are sitting there, and every time, you know, somebody once in a while tries to play them, but they don't really work. And so we've walked past this white wood in, I think, a Nightmare on Elm Street cabinet or something like that for years. And finally, last year, Mike came up to us after he saw what FAST was doing and what MPF could do, and he said, hey, can you guys make a game from just a whole bucket of parts? And we said, yeah, what do you have in mind? And he took us over to this Whitewood, which is kind of like Mark's game there, except with Sharpie written all over the inserts and arrows and things drawn on there and lots of, I'm going to call them hacked mechanisms and things like that. And it turns out that Whitewood was Brooks and Dunn. And Brooks and Dunn, we came to learn, was the last game Gottlieb made before they went out of business.
Or the last game they were working
attempting
on.
Attempting to make, right. So what we learned throughout this process was that apparently this game was delivered around the same day that Gottlieb shut down. And there's things on this board that I'll show you in a little bit that there's things that are not on this board that are on every other Gottlieb board. And so this was just an afterthought once Gottlieb shut down, as best we can tell. And this whole journey in the, over the past year, I live in Omaha, Nebraska. I took home the playfield and some milk crates full of parts. Some were for Brooks and Dunn and some weren't. And so I took all of these things home and I began to set them up. I think Mike asked how long it would take us, and I said I was so excited at the prospect of building this rare game that I said, oh, we'll have this done by February. And
it was literally Expo last year, you know, because we're talking to Mike about this thing, and he says, hey, you know, you can make this, you can make a game. Yeah. So next thing we know, we're walking out with the Brooks and Dunn playfield.
We had to get permission, remember? We came to go get the playfield from somebody that works for Mike, and they're like, yeah, you can't have one of those.
Like, there are literally seven in the world.
Yeah.
This thing is more valuable than your truck driving home.
So we had to get permission.
And it's a blank playfield and a couple of milk crates of parts. The game said that may or may not be for this Brooks and Dunn.
That should be the next slide. Yeah, there we go. So this is what we brought back, an empty playfield. And we, like I said, we were super excited. We thought we're going to turn this thing around really fast. We built a few pinball machines in the past. We thought we'd have it flipping really fast. And so within a month or so, I started really kind of grinding on it, getting to work on it, and I started adding some of the components, the easy ones, right? Because I know where the drop target bank goes. There's a giant slot on that thing. And then there's also a jukebox mechanism, which we can see. Where's the laser button? There we go. Up here. And the jukebox is actually pretty cool, but those are about the only two obvious things based on the bucket of parts I have and the giant holes in the playfield. The rest of this stuff, I don't have. There are some stand-up targets, but they're the funky Gottlieb ones, the smart targets, I think they were called.
Kicking targets.
No, well, there's the kicking targets, too, but they actually have. So Gottlieb, I learned a lot about Gottlieb. I have a lot of respect for the mechanisms that they put into these. So there's the kicking targets, which were new to me, which you hit it as if it's a stand-up target, and it kicks it back to you. But then there's also these smart switches, I think they were called.
Piezoelectric switches?
Yeah. They were piezoelectric switches that they weren't actually mechanically opening and closing a circuit. It was when the metal on the switch under the playfield gets close to the piezoelectric sensor, it registers a hit. And so these things never fouled out. They never got dirty and fouled out, and they worked for a very long time. We tried to make those work. I gave up. It was just easier to put the regular stuff in because after I got the jukebox in and the drop targets, I realized that I have a lot of work to do in order to get this thing going.
And the thing is, I mean, again, two milk crates. We don't know if all the parts are in the milk crates. We don't know if all the parts in the milk crates are for this machine. And we don't have a picture of what this machine looks like when it's done.
Here's the other thing. We don't have, so if you're familiar with the underside of Gottlieb System 3s, every other one I've seen has a silk screen on the back to show you where all the mechanisms go and the orientation they have. And they all have dimples when they're brand new. We didn't have that.
that's part of the underside.
Yeah. So we had no dimples and we had no silk screen. So we didn't know the orientation of the mechanisms. We didn't know that if I put the flipper mechanism on this way, then that interferes with the vertical up kicker because we hadn't gotten around to mounting all those things yet. And so there's a lot of trial and error and there are a lot of extra holes on the bottom as you try to move things around. Because this is what we had to start with. And I likened it to, if you take this empty underside of the play field and take two boxes of random parts, plus several other care packages that Mike sent once I said, hey, I need something that kind of looks like this, and he would go rifle through his pinball barn and find something that resembled what I described. He would also throw in some other parts too. So I likened this entire project to putting together a jigsaw puzzle with no picture on it. And then some of the pieces of this jigsaw puzzle are missing. And also you have some other pieces from a different jigsaw puzzle with no picture on it that may or may not actually fit into your puzzle. So this was a whole lot of trial and error. And it probably ended up taking 4 months of solid work just to get this thing assembled, to find out which plastics go where, because none of the plastics have any artwork on them. And so it's just matching up random parts here and there to try to figure out how to get this thing to work. And on top of that, we had to figure out, there's a mechanism on here, the jukebox. I don't think we have a better. No, this is me matching parts, by the way. Like, okay, I think this one looks like it should fit right here, so let's try that, and then matching other parts to it. So this jukebox, I should have put a different picture in there. The jukebox is actually a pretty cool mechanism. It has a scoop inside of it, and that scoop can be moved to direct the ball down into a subway, like this, or it can flip up so they can direct the ball up into the jukebox where it then rotates around inside the jukebox and rolls back out in a different direction. And it's really cool. I actually like it better with the jukebox plastic off of there because then you can see the ball doing its thing. That mechanism Gottlieb made, but they didn't ever have a production-ready activation mechanism underneath the playfield to operate this. So I had to make one. And I tried probably 15 different iterations of coil mounts and levers and springs and all sorts of different things to make that thing hold that scoop in the appropriate position, hard enough that the ball wouldn't make it move around, but also loose enough that I could control it still with a coil, and could not come up with anything. I bet I have 60 hours just into that stupid jukebox. So what I ended up doing, I ended up getting a servo. And like Mark said, he uses servos in his game. And with the servo, I'm able to just say, you know, the scoop up position is this and the scoop down position is this. And so with MPF, the Mission Pinball Framework, we can just send a command that says jukebox up. And it'll put that in the up position or the down position. The only thing I'm worried about is that these servos that I bought were the cheap, like, $8 ones. And so they're plastic gearing on the inside. So I brought three just in case we break them right away. But there are metal geared servos that we can use in place of that. So we can use that.
Let's jump ahead a couple to, because Gabe's got lots of stories about building parts. There's
You only gave me 10 minutes.
What's that?
Yeah. I had 10 minutes.
Yeah. So there's an LCD stage in the playfield with the 3D printed. He, built diverters, 3D printed lots of parts. But I want to go to the next one here. I want to fast forward. So this machine is sitting out there in the expo hall right now. But I want to kind of catch you up to speed with where we are, like literally at 6:01 p.m. on Friday evening. So Gabe comes to expo, bringing the playfield. It's complete, but it's just a playfield.
Right. And over the past few weeks, Mike Pasak had been acquiring a cabinet and artwork to put on the cabinet. So the playfield and the cabinet just met yesterday afternoon at like 3:00. And so since I arrived, we've been wiring in cabinet switches. We have to redo the entire power system because this isn't a Gottlieb System 3 game. This is, a new modern machine. So we need power supply for RGB LEDs. We need power supply for the new RGB DMD. Power supply for the computer that runs it, power supply for the coils and things like that. And so there's a lot more stuff that we have to do to convert this from a old Gottlieb, I forget which cabinet this was, but from an old Gottlieb cabinet into something new. And so we've reached the tipping point. I think we're about 75% done. We should have this thing lit up tonight. We just have to run some power and get the computer hooked up to it.
But it's a lot.
I've been working on that though. You and Jan and Quinn have been cranking away at modes, trying to get the game rules tightened up so that once we get this thing turned on, people can play it.
Yeah, we can tell the full story in the booth. You know, Gabe actually got in contact with John Norris, who is one of the original designers of this game, and he wrote to us 19 pages of rules based on pictures we sent him of the game, of what he remembered, and also what he thought he probably would have done in 1996 for rules. And so Gabe had been spending the past, year working on the hardware, as all good projects go. Just about 3 weeks ago, Gabe and I actually sat down to start building the software configuration for this. Jan and Quinn and I have been here all week doing a hackathon, adding features to Mission Pinball Framework and adding configurations to Brooks and Dunn. So we have a Mission Pinball Framework like simulator app you can use so you can interact with the play field from your laptop when you're not in front of it and sort of play with it and push buttons and stuff.
I walked in at the tail end of the highway thing. It sounds like what they were talking about.
It does sound like what they were talking about. So maybe they should use Mission Pinball Framework too. It's cheaper. Regardless, so Brian Dominey is actually really great and one of the who writes their code and one of the early on helpers that helped get Mission Pinball Framework off the ground. So it's all making pinball, making friends. But the thing is, getting this cabinet wired. I mean, it was you have to wire in the amp and the all cabinet buttons and everything. And I don't know if you can see that. That is this guy. About 3 hours ago, with a jigsaw on the floor, cutting the speaker hole larger on the bottom of that cabinet to fit the 10-inch subwoofer that he had brought for this.
It's a music game. Do we really want to use that tiny little cardboard 8-inch sub that came with that thing?
Yeah.
So this game, it's Brooks and Dunn themed. At the time, we didn't have a whole lot of capabilities of playing music, and it was going to be pretty low fidelity. This game, we have full-on music. It's all country music that's in there, of course. Most of the all the modes have the different Brooks and Dunn song music bed playing, but because we have that LCD screen on there, we actually play the music videos that were definitely not pulled from YouTube. but we have good sound, good quality sound in this game. So we wanted to make sure it sounded all right as well. So I'm literally cutting a hole for a bigger subwoofer on there. I think I still have sawdust on me.
Yeah, actually quite literally. That's this project. We're all going back to the Fast Pinball booth to pick up where we left off. We'll work on it till they kick us out tonight. We can work on the software all night long and just get this thing up and flipping, and hopefully we should be able to see it soon. So with that, Gabe Knuth, representing Brooks and Dunn.
I'm representing Mission Pinball.
Thank you so much. And so to all of you who joined on stage today, thank you very much. We will all be hanging out in the Fast Pinball booth through the remainder of the show. So please come by, chit-chat. We can show you how things work. There's a bunch more folks over there with custom projects that they're working on. So come check it out. So to all of you who attended and wanted to hear about what it's like making pinball and making friends, that's our story. So thank you so much.